Okay. Miraculously, it shows up. Now, wait a minute. How do I move things forward here?
Use page up or page
down. Oh, I have to click this? Okay. All right, great. All right, I just... okay. First of all, just this is 1997 versus 2002. A little bit of typo in the title and that showed up. But I'd also like to acknowledge my funding sources, which is the National Institute on Drug Abuse, Center for Addiction and Behavioral Health Research, where I work, and the School of Social Welfare in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. But I also wanted to acknowledge Lance Pollack, whose name doesn't appear in the title, but helped me with the one of the data sets that we're employing here and has been part of this collaborative project. So let's start out with historical considerations. So between 1997 and 2002, there was a development of highly effective multi-drug antiretroviral treatments were adopted, and people noted subsequent decline in AIDS death rate among men who have sex with men. But what we've seen is, since the sort of turn of the decade, in studies, epidemiological studies, there's increased risky sexual behavior among MSM that have been reported, and increased HIV positive rates among men who have sex with men. And more recently, there have been stories in various cities across the country reporting increase, this isn't just at the turn of the decade, but throughout the decade, increase in HIV AIDS among gay men. So this is the sort of context that I'm reporting this. I think, though, what you can focusing on change in the early decade, change early in the decade, we can begin to look at that as potentially a critical turning point with respect to behavioral change. And what I want to do is sort of focus on factors that might have fostered changes in order to potentially structure more effective prevention. Why focus on drug abuse? A couple of people have noted that there were elevated rates among gay men and men who have sex with men. This shift, we might look at this as it may correspond to increased substance abuse over the decade, as people have pointed out in a more theoretical context. David Ostrow, so the drug use in sexual context is actually the first talk actually sort of expanded these kinds of thinking about this in a way that I don't think is ever... I just wanted to compliment the first speaker. But one of the people who talked about this was that drug use in sexual context is a lubricating and desensitizing maneuver that facilitates acts which are more satisfying and intimate than their prescribed safer sex drug abstinence norms. And drug use, as David McKernan says, could focus as a legitimate means of facilitating cognitive escape. We also had at the sort of turn of the decade, increased use of party drugs has been documented in the epidemiological literature, such as ecstasy or MDMA, which may facilitate the kind of escape that McKernan was talking about, and unsafe, and so that could possibly account for some of the shifts over time. So here I'm going to focus again on the role of drug use in potentially corresponding with change in risk behavior. So first of all, we want to look at whether substance abuse changed among MSM at the turn of the decade. So how did the rates of drug use compare in 1997 versus 2003? Okay, that's going to change. Did risk behavior change in 1990s? Did actual risk behavior change? And was drug use differentially associated with that risk behavior? We're looking at two studies. One is, we're going to call it the MSM supplement, because it was a supplement to, we had gone out and done a general population survey in Chicago, and we actually did ask questions about sexual orientation. But then we got a supplemental grant from the National Institute on Drug Abuse to focus on a targeted sample of men who have sex with men. And we're also bringing in another study, the Urban Men's Health study, which is a multi-site study. But we're just going to pick the Chicago data, Chicago subsample of these data. Again, that was 1997, 1998. Chicago was 2002, 2003, mostly 2002. Got to get that straight. The Chicago sample was a survey of 216 men screened to have a history of consensual sex with other men, or who identified themselves as gay or bisexual. And the respondents were sampled, just a little bit of sampling insight, sampled from zip codes in Chicago with a high MSM probability. We had a community advisory board, you know, sort of informed us in our selection of zip code census tracts. Surveys were administered from September 2002 through January of 2003. The Urban Men's Health Study was a stratified probability sample of adult men from San Francisco, New York, Chicago, and LA. They used a telephone survey. Ours was a face-to-face with an audio computer-assisted self-interview. Within Chicago, they surveyed from telephone prefixes covering 10 zip codes. And there, again, it was between April 1997 and February 1998. Their sample included 415 adult men. I will say there was our study just focused really on two zip codes. They had 10 zip codes, so it was a little bit more diverse in terms of its geographical representation within Chicago. But our two zip codes were overlapped with two of their zip codes, and probably were the most heavily had the largest sample of largest sampled zip codes in their study. Okay, enough of this setting up. So just this slide just compares the two studies, the earlier study on the left and the later study on the right. What I would want to say about this is that the earlier study was slightly younger, there were no differences on race, ethnicity. They were both predominantly white samples. And in terms of, this is kind of important because if we're comparing these studies, we would want to see a fair amount of overlap. We also noticed that the later study is a somewhat more economically advantaged a group of people. I would say that that may have something to do with what happened to the economy in the early 90s versus the late 90s, the end of the Clinton boom era. But anyway, and they're roughly equivalent in terms of their education. It also may have something to do with age as well, too, the older sample. Let's see. Now, this talks about whether they were sexually active with other men, and predominantly in both they were. And then the HIV, in both studies, they're asked to report about their HIV positive status, whether they're HIV positive, negative, or not tested. The other kind of interesting finding is that fewer people in the later study reported that their status was unknown or they hadn't been tested. Okay, so our key risk outcome measures, any receptive anal intercourse without a condom, any insertive anal intercourse without a condom, and we have these two measures, whether they were, you know, I would say are indicators of highly risky activity. Among those engaged in receptive anal intercourse, 100% non-condom use in that behavior, and among those engaged in insertive anal intercourse, 100% non-condom use in that activity. And we also look at whether they reported having sex with risky partners, and that is whether they reported having sex with partners whose status, whose HIV status was positive or unknown. So it's kind of non-serial sorting behavior for HIV negative men. And our substance use measures, we asked questions about past 6 month drug and alcohol use. That's the UMHS. We asked since our surveys are really focused on drug use, we asked very extensive questions, and which could be made equivalent to those that UMHS used about a number of drugs. So we're looking at a 6 month time frame to be equivalent with how UMHS handled it. And so we're going to employ some indicators of specific substances as well as some general sort of catch-all measures. Okay, so this is slide shows that among men who reported receptive or anal intercourse, rates of condom use were significantly lower in the MSM supplement or the later survey than they were in the UMHS. And this is whether you're looking at just any event, any non-condom use, or looking at sort of among those who are involved in behavior, whether they're completely, behavior can be completely characterized as non-condom use. Let's see. Okay, this slide underscores the point that among HIV negative men who are sexually active, There is significantly more partner sorting in the later study, and sort of how to explain this slide is so people were asked about their sex with people who were HIV positive or unknown status, and among HIV negative men, only 38% reported that they were had encounters with men of that status in the later study, whereas 61% in the earlier study reported encounters with men who were HIV positive or unknown status. So you see that's been talked about a lot in the literature, this notion of serosorting, which we show a trend towards increasing on that. This slide also illustrates an important trend in these data, is that HIV negative men in the later study report more unprotective or risky behavior when they're involved exclusively with non-risky partners, so when they're serosorting. So it's important to note in these data that partner status is an important moderator of risk for extremely risky behavior. When all partners are non-risky, men in the later study report more unprotected sex. And there's actually no difference when at least one partner is risky. Both men in both studies rarely report involvement in that risky behavior. So now we're going to get to the drug use, which is the sort of point of this session too, to explore that. And this is some nice bar charts comparing the two samples. Two samples are characterized by high rates of drug use, which is consistent with the literature. Marijuana use is very prevalent. Let's summarize this. The next slide. Key differences are that there are significantly less inhalant use and more opiate use, more ecstasy use were reported in the later MSM supplement survey compared to the earlier Urban Men's Health study sample. And just note, we do everything technically appropriate with design effects and weighted comparisons, et cetera. So there were differences across these studies in terms of drug use, suggesting certain types of drugs were more prevalent. The alcohol differences are also apparent as well. To summarize this, there's more frequent alcohol use that was reported in the supplement sample compared to the UMHS. And a combined measure of heavy drinking, which was five or more drinks per occasion plus weekly drinking, suggested that there were higher rates as well of heavy drinking among men in the later study. So that just summarizes the point. Now, we're getting to a little bit more complexity. So we wanted to see the extent to which six-month substance use for specific substances might have facilitated or been associated with risky behavior. So we investigated the extent to which each of the four risky indicators noted previously were associated with the different measures of substance use. And as what I could say is there's no consistency in our findings. The adjusted odds ratios and corrected for multiple comparisons is what you're supposed to do with this, suggest that ecstasy was associated with increased risk behavior in the later study. There was a sort of non-significant but trend that it was also associated with risky behavior in the early study. By the way, if they're colored, it means they're significant. They're statistically significant. The odds ratios are statistically significant. I'll summarize it in the next slide. Well, no, I won't. Okay. So you can see, actually, and there's one kind of troubling inverse effect, which is that this catch-all other drugs category seems to be associated with reduced risk in the later survey. And I'll talk about that in a minute, in a quick minute. Okay, we then incorporated a general measure of drug use, which was all the drugs combined except for marijuana. And it looked at its association with unprotected sex. Here we see receptive anal intercourse, increased odds, but just within the earlier Urban Men's Health survey, increased odds for unprotected insertive anal intercourse as well, but just in the Urban Men's Health Survey. It's not significant in the later study. So this general measure of drug use appears to be associated with increased risk earlier on, but not later on. And then this is that more extreme measure of 100% non-condom use. Again, that shows the increased risk with the earlier study was associated with this general measure of drug use, but not with the later study. Okay, and then this is another thing we looked at is a risky partner being defined as having sex with somebody who's HIV positive or of unknown status. Men in the later study, the MSM survey, were significantly more likely to report involvement with a risky partner if they were using drugs in this combined category. So if they were using drugs, it was a risk factor for non-serial sorting behavior. So what are my conclusions? I still have 30 seconds. No, okay. What are my conclusions? On the whole, there's some evidence. There is some evidence for changing patterns of drug use over time. There is more club drug use, ecstasy, opiate use, and heavy drinking in the later survey than and more inhalants in the earlier study, but both had high rates of marijuana use. Now, club drug use did show an association with one form of unprotected sex in the later study, but it wasn't consistently associated with risky behavior in either study. And the general measure of 6 months drug use, excluding marijuana use, was associated with increased odds of unprotected for the earlier study, but not for the later study. I like when findings are so easy to... No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to scratch my head. Okay. So two measures of drug use showed association with decreased rates of unprotected sex, and there was a trend of decrease, so certain kinds of drug use actually decreased unprotected sex in the later study. We showed, however, and this is sort of one of the, we showed, however, that our measure of general drug use was significantly associated with higher rates of sex with risky partners, especially in the later study. Having sex with risky partners results in less unprotected sex, as we showed that was the slide that showed that people were serial sorting, and they were serial sorting more in the later study. So between sample differences, this is the complexity, in unprotected sex are moderated by sex with less risky partners, which is significantly, it actually should be non-serial sorting, which is significantly less prevalent in the MSM supplement. So here are some couple of caveats that the measures in the earlier study were based on questions asking respondents about how many partners they had done each activity with in the past year, whereas in the later study we asked about how many times they had done each activity in the past 6 months, and there were no partner-specific questions. So there was a little bit difference in time frame. However, within the shorter time frame, the men in the later study reported more risky behavior, so it's kind of... We made it a little bit harder for ourselves to find a difference. And then there's some other caveats about how partner status in UMHS questions were based on pertaining up to four specific partners, the four most recent partners in the past year. So that serial sorting question may be probably more non-comparable than some of the other questions, since in the MSM study they were based on global questions pertaining to all possible partners in the past 6 months. One, as I told you earlier, that the UMHS was a phone survey. The MSM was a supplement, was a face-to-face ACASI, audio computer assisted self-interview. And obviously mode sampling differences could affect the substantive findings. So the implications are, finally, that serial sorting, which evidently increased in Chicago and elsewhere at the turn of the decade, and it's been documented by other recent papers, is problematic as an intervention strategy, because partner status is not always known. Other STDs are transmitted during unprotected sex. But so while drug use did not appear to increase the risk of unprotected sex in the later sample, it did affect the likelihood of having sex with a risky partner, and since drug use increases the risk of exposure through increased contact with risky partners and also increased rates of casual sex, which we find in our survey, drug use continues to be an important risk factor for HIV and STDs, which prevention programs targeted at gay and bisexual men may not be adequately addressing. I think that's it. I forgot to say that I have no conflicts. I don't think they inserted that slide in here, so in case anybody was wondering, the answer is no. Sorry.
Thank you, Michael. Question.
Those are all great points, and I tried to mention that. I will say, though, that the zip codes that we include, as I was trying to say this clearly, maybe it's a headache and being late, that those were the zip codes that contributed most to the UMHS survey. But that said, it's clearly a wider, it's, you know, there's a, it's a wider dispersion of a sample in the UMHS. In terms of the it's an ACAS here, so it's audio computer assisted. So they, it's not through an interviewer. They are self-administering it. There's an interviewer who gives them the laptop and it comes to the house. So I think, I'm trying to see what we can say from these two. I would say they are different data sets. And we probably ask better questions about drugs, and they probably ask better questions about sex. So that was, if I was going to say, and yes, it's one of the, you know, it's one of the hard things to do when you're doing secondary analysis, but your points are all well taken.
Thank you, Michael. Our last presentation is entitled Developing a More Queer-Friendly Quilt Line in a Rural Midwest State. The authors are Shelley Campo, Natasha Ackelson, Esther Baker, John Lowe, and Mary Aquilino. And the presenter is Shelley Campo.